Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast, Kermode and Mayo's Film Review. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
Hello and welcome to a podcast from BBC Radio 5 Live.
A frankly strange podcast, let's be honest.
That's right, because the original intention, as you're about to hear, is that we were supposed to be...
Now, hold on. The original intention is that we were going to be on live from 2 till 4 on a Friday like normal.
But then
killjoy went and announced some wedding...
That's right.
Right.
If you're too rude about the wedding, I'm going to pour this confetti over your head. Don't think that I won't.
I'm not being rude about it. It's just when they were planning it, you don't think they could have gone... Fridays? No, that's Wittertainment.
Anyway, so what we thought we were going to be on normally, then we weren't going to be on normally, but we were going to be live streamed and then broadcast later in the evening.
What we were going to do was we were going to do the show as we normally do it, but not from 2 till 4, from 2 till 3.
Anyway, so...
But you could log on to the internet and watch and listen.
Anyway, this is all boring stuff.
No, it's not.
Because the podcasters don't care, because the podcasters are just going to get a podcast as normal, except it's just an hour rather than 2 hours.
Yeah, but what happened was a bunch of people went on the internet and looked, and they could see on the internet you and me discussing Thor by Kenneth Branagh, but not hearing us. So what they could hear was, coming up the mall now is...
Richard Bacon doesn't sound anything like
Lord
that.
Lord Chumley Smiddly Bongdinong, and following him, the Lady Blitherington Blong of Cardiff, and don't they look lovely?
Hugh Edwards,
and
if he's
Elton John
will be very, very concerned that his job is going to be... They could do it as a red button feature for the next royal wedding, revolutionary commentary. You know, if you want commentary from someone who's not buying into this whole thing, press the red button now to hear some commentary by a Trotskyist who's got a dark, deep, rotten heart to the core. Anyway, so this is all coming out, so it's just a shortened version of the podcast. Hello to all runners, by the way, and all marathon runners. Lots of people running the marathon in Belfast who've been wanting a mention, so hello to all you guys.
Hello to Jason Isaacs, who sent me a text.
Yes, hello to Jason, and hello to David.
To remind me that we hadn't said hello to him recently, so...
Is that true?
No, he sent me a text saying, you know, welcome back, which was kind of him, but I think it was also, welcome back, oi, I'm here.
Hello to Fairport Convention, and Dave Morrissey, and Michael Sheen, and Stephen Fry. It's very nice to have them there, but meantime, on with the show. What?
Well, no, there's just an empty studio. Oh, no, we're there.
Are we there? Are we live streaming?
Yeah, we appear to be. We appear to be a terrible delay. Yeah, there we go, fine. I waved my hands about 30 seconds ago, and then it just happened. I think, so we are on. Yeah, there we are.
Okay, we're on.
Yeah.
I can hear
royal music.
Hear royal
is that
music.
Hang on, it's coming off of this. Hang on, let me turn that off. Stop it.
It's
coming off of Radio 5. That's why if you go onto Radio 5 live stream at the moment, you get a picture of you and me talking, but you get the sound of Richard Bacon at Four Weddings and a Funeral. And can I just say incidentally, congratulations to whoever it was, I can't remember the name, who tweeted, this director's cut of Four Weddings and a Funeral that's on telly at the moment is really dragging on.
It was. It was a bit of a Richard Curtis production, the whole thing.
Was it? I haven't seen it.
It was great.
What happened at the end? What was the final score?
The final score was 3-0.
3-0. Okay.
The home side won.
Okay.
There was a lot of international interest, but a definite win for the home team.
Very good.
Yeah. So it didn't tickle your fancy then?
Well, no. Were there any surprises? Did anyone do anything?
No.
Did you watch it?
I watched the whole thing.
Did you?
Yeah, I found myself quite excited. In fact, we all went down. The whole family went down last night.
No.
Did the walk. We did the walk, yeah. Did the Mall, did the Palace, did the Abbey. Hello to all live streamers, by the way. This is we're not actually recording anything yet.
We can't start until 5 past. That's
5 past two is when we're going to start.
So if you're watching us on the live stream pre-program interlude, please tweet us now and tell us what it looks like.
You can email as well, mayo@bbc.co.uk. Okay, and what I don't know is whether you can text, because if you text 85058, it might be that Richard Bacon will pick it up.
Yeah, and Richard Bacon, whilst interviewing a member of the royal family, will ask them what they thought of Arthur, the remake starring Russell Brand.
So I think there is an art here, given that the text could go to Richard for royal coverage or to us for movie coverage.
You decide.
Could you construct a clever text which could work for both?
Yeah, how about, what do you think of the Queen?
Well, yeah, that's a little bit bald, though, isn't it? I'm thinking of something more subtle and clever.
Well, really. That's clever, because the Queen is a real person, but she's also...
And it's also a movie.
It's a television movie.
I realise that.
Yeah, OK.
So, I think we could do this. So, if anyone is just watching us on live stream, you could do this. We'll mention this. But the problem is we can't go on about it once we've started our recording.
No, that'll spoil the thing.
Because when people are listening from 9:30 tonight, they won't be able to take part at all. Yeah.
J. Benedict Brown, I can see at Wittertainment, but I can hear more... Something 2001. Yeah, so... Yeah, apparently people can see us but not hear us yet. Well, that's ridiculous. Nobody's hearing any of this. They're watching it, but nobody's hearing
it. So they won't actually be able to hear the words?
They can't hear this. Tweet us if you're going to actually hear what we're saying.
Or email or text.
Or email it, but I don't think they can.
So if you go online, so the online stream is just pictures of us. Frankly, they might as well just have pictures of the Mal and Richard, because that's going to be slightly more photogenic.
I'll tell you what, right, so because nobody can hear us, let's pretend we're having a really, really fantastic fight about something, OK?
This might look like a monarchy versus the republic attack. So, look, this is quite interesting. So I have absolutely no idea whether anyone's going to be able to hear us then.
At the moment, I don't think they can. I've just got people tweeting that they can see us, but they can't hear us.
How frustrating must that be? Because on balance...
Generally, hearing us is the better thing. Do you realise that we are now doing the show for ourselves? This is like for no one else's benefit. Can you put this out on the podcast? Right, put this on the podcast, otherwise it just becomes...
Well, it's not just for us, it's for our production team as well.
Okay.
No one else is listening. We could talk about super injunctions.
Don't, because we might be on air. I don't understand the technology.
What's
don't,
that hand language
don't,
I'm going?
Don't.
No, it's all right. I'm not going to. I'm just saying we could.
Okay.
But obviously we're not going to.
Hang on, look. If I go back to the Radio 5 Live website and I turn the volume on, this is what you're getting on Radio 5. No, you're getting you and me, but you're getting this.
Yeah, well, that's Kate and Will.
That's no good at all, is it? That's not what we want.
Well, it is what the nation wants.
No, it's what the nation wants, but it's not what we want
right
now.
It's not what we want. What we really, really want. Well, look, we're going to start...
They're reforming, apparently.
In 30... Are they?
Well, no, there's a musical being... It's been written by French and Saunders.
In 25 seconds, we're going to start our recording. Okay.
And then we go... I'll tell you what, start by just going, and that's what I thought of Thor.
Would that be funny?
Yeah.
Hello, good evening. This is BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm Simon Mayo.
And I'm Mark Kermode, and that's what I thought of Thor, and I have no more to say on the matter.
So you've missed it. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. So
what's happening is this is a very strange situation that we find ourselves in.
And then some.
Once again, we are recording this in the afternoon, so people are watching this being live-streamed.
Yes.
However, as we speak, the only sound they're hearing is that of the Royal Wedding coverage.
That was right, yes.
Anyway, but for everyone who's listening now, thank you very much indeed. This is the podcast, and this is going to be our live show. This is what it's going to be. It's going to be movie reviews for the next hour, something like that, and we have these films to be discussed.
We're going to talk about Thor, Cedar Rapids, I Saw the Devil, Insidious, The Veteran, and other stuff. Do you think it is at the moment that people actually cannot hear us, they can only see us? Because that would be really annoying.
It would be very, very frustrating, because it would be exactly the wrong way around.
Exactly. But if you're listening on the podcast... Congratulations, you're just hearing us and not seeing us.
Yes.
Which is what you'd want.
Exactly.
Okay.
If, however, you're on the... I'm sorry, this is slightly confusing, but if you are watching us on the live stream and it's 6 minutes past two on a Friday afternoon, and then you can hear us or work out what we're saying, can you email mayo@bbc.co.uk, text 85058...
Or tweet at Wittertainment.
At Wittertainment.
Just to let us know.
And the task and the challenge, and obviously you can't do this if you're listening in the evening, is to construct a text which could be read out by me about movies or read out by Richard about the Royal Wedding, depending on where it ends up.
But you need a bit of background to that. Well, that's because at the moment, if you go to the website, if you're listening at 5%, you see the pictures of us, but you hear Richard talking about the Royal Wedding.
Here's Hannah, who's an American expat, but living in Lyon. In France, who's been, for various reasons that I won't go into, going back over old recordings of the show. She's found recordings going back as far as March the 11th, 2005.
Wow.
She's been downloading them and enjoying them while we've been away.
Because we've been on since 2001?
That'll be it.
Because it's the 10th anniversary
it
coming
is.
Up.
We've been we're 10 almost 10
years.
Indescribable years. So in case you're wondering, says Hannah, how things have changed or stayed the same in 5 years. Here's a partial list. Mark has mispronounced Will Ferrell's name for at least 5 years. It's just like Colin Farrell, i.e. Ferrell, not Farrell.
Farrell. Okay.
So how do you say it?
Well, apparently Will Ferrell, but I've always said Will Ferrell, because Will Ferrell sounds wrong. It sounds like a wild cat.
Simon told the same anecdote about meeting Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which I just had recently in 2011. And if you keep going, we'll be getting to that anecdote again.
Very good, yes.
In a couple of years.
Yes.
Comment which I've enjoyed so far the most. Why is there a chair sitting on the sofa? Sorry, that's not a chair, that's Dermot Mulroney. I don't remember that.
Was that this show?
No idea. No, don't think so. The affection lavished on the BBFC goes back much further than I dreamt of.
Yeah.
But Mark's right to mention them every week as their system is so much better than the MPAA.
No, I agree. Yeah, the MPAA, which is the American ratings board, well, the ratings board of the MPAA.
And the best review of any movie over the last few years is this: excrementally bad. And if only they would dig a very big hole and bury the negative in it, the whole world would be a much better place.
Pirates of the Caribbean 3?
The Doctor said this about some abomination called The Wedding Date, which incidentally co-starred Mr. Mulroney, who's been mentioned
twice
already. Kim Hansen, BSC, such and such, blah, blah. I was listening to Mark's 2005 I was listening to Mark's top five of 2010, and I decided to check out Chico and Rita.
All right.
I tried Netflix first, though their selection is limited. Unsurprisingly, Chico and Rita was unavailable for viewing. Trying to be helpful, they then proceeded to suggest movies...
Other films that you might like?
Similar.
OK.
Well, first I got Talk to Her, which is fine. El Bola, also fine. Then they suggested Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief, Princess and the Pony, and Marley and Me. Naturally, I thought of you and Mark. After you've defeated 3D and bad cinema manners, maybe you could take on poorly constructed automated movie recommendation systems.
Yes, it'll just be because it figures that you like animation and therefore you might like something fantastical. Chico and Rita is just about to come out on DVD, and there's a soundtrack CD coming out, and there's a graphic novel book coming out as well. I loved that film. I thought it was really... I watched it again just recently. It's really wonderful, really, really holds up, and apparently we are still available only in picture form.
Which is going to be frustrating and maddening so many people.
There we go.
So we apologise if you've had to wait till now to hear the sound and you just looked at some entertaining pictures. Let's wave at the people who've stayed there loyally. So the top 10 this week have Limitless at number 10.
You know, which has done much better than anybody expected. I think it's good fun. It was certainly better than I had expected. It's a good lead role for Bradley Cooper. It's a sort of Twilight Zone style science fiction story. Just about stretched to breaking point, but it just about manages to hold it together. Small cameo appearance by Robert De Niro, and more fun than I thought it was going to be.
TT3D, Closer to the Edge at number 9.
You see, now, I'm really interested in this. Now, the first thing I have to say is I saw TT3D in 2D because they were finishing the 3D on it. And
but was it still called TT3D?
It was called Closer to the Edge in the print that I saw, although I think the official title is Closer to the Edge TT3D.
Yeah, Closer to the Edge is on the posters.
Yeah, but I think it also says in small writing TT3D. Because, and obviously, I mean, I was interested in this anyway because, you know, I have a family connection with the Isle of Man, and the TT, as I'm sure you know, is this incredibly dangerous race which is run on island roads, people going at unbelievably high speeds. And, you know, invariably there are accidents and quite often there is loss of life. And I'm not a sports fan and I'm not a motorbike racing fan, but in the version of TT3D that I saw in 2D, I thought it was a really interesting documentary, not only because many of the characters are so fascinating and, you know, interesting, but because the documentary seemed to be about something, and it's about that issue about whether or, you know, what right people have to risk their lives in the pursuit of something which others may find completely absurd. And I was really engrossed by it. I found, when I was watching it, I became very, very anxious. Not, you know, it's not like thrill of the minute, you know, oh, fantastic, how exciting. It's like, blimey, I hope everyone gets out of this okay. And I thought it was a very well-done documentary and a really good piece of filmmaking. As I said, I didn't see it in 3D, and frankly, having seen it in 2D, I did not need to see it in 3D. I know for a fact that the 3D stuff wouldn't have been mounted on the front of a bike. You can't do 3D photography, as far as I understand, from the front of a bike, because the bike shakes too much and you simply can't do it. So the 3D stuff would have been, you know, the ground-mounted stuff anyway. But 2D, it didn't need to be 3D for me.
And we've been sent some fancy doodah 3D glasses in posh cases.
Yeah, well, apparently they are... Have you got it there?
No.
So they are fancy doodah. They're meant to improve the 3D experience, largely, I suppose, by not having been worn by, you know, 25 other sets of people with greasy hands who've stuck their fingers all over the 3D lens. I mean, obviously, the 3D experience can be massively improved by watching in 2D. Or, of course, watching using the 2D glasses, which my friend Simon Miller came up with a year ago or so. He gave me for a present. He gave me these glasses that convert 3D films into 2D films. As everyone who's been Twittering me recently has pointed out, somebody is now actually marketing these as 2D glasses. And I got a text from Simon Miller the other day saying, I could have been a millionaire, but you know, it's very simple.
You must go on at great length about 3D.
That, yeah.
And tell us what you really think. Yeah, okay. Source code is at 8.
Which I like very much. There's been a lot of discussion about whether or not... Oh, thank you, David. David has just brought in the...
Who's David?
You know who David is. This comes up every week, right? So that's apparently meant... Put him on.
Okay, well, this is a really... this is a treat for the online viewers
who can't hear what you're doing anyway. Yeah, so it's just a pair of 3D spectacles. It's meant, you know...
I don't even know if the camera's on. Is it on?
Let me look at the website and see whether it's on. Hang on, Bredio. Yes, it's on me at the moment. So, yes, there you are. You're wearing the science fiction glasses. Good. So the next time you go and see a 3D film, watch them in that and tell me whether you might think it's any better. I imagine it won't be much difference, but who knows.
Anyway, source code is what you were talking about.
Yeah, I like it very much. A lot of discussion about whether or not the ending is compromised. I think actually the ending does quite a good job of both keeping the crowd happy but also keeping its options open. I think it's more intelligent than people are giving it credit for. I also think Duncan Jones is a very, very fine filmmaker, and good for him for making something so smart and demonstrating once again that big blockbuster entertainment can be really intelligent.
Red Riding Hood is at number 7.
Yeah, and it's funny because Catherine Hardwicke came on the show. We both like Twilight. I think we both had the same feeling about Red Riding Hood. I think I may have been less enthusiastic about it than you were. I think the main problem with Red Riding Hood is that it misses almost all the moments that I really want. See, there are several adaptations of Red Riding Hood. Cinema is littered with them. And watching this, I thought, you know, why isn't it Company of Wolves? Why isn't it The Village? Why isn't it Freeway? Why isn't it, Hard Candy? Why doesn't it have the resonance of any of those things? I mean, it did feel terribly clunky to me. I mean, there are things in it that I think are handled at best okay. But didn't you feel it was awfully creaky and pantomime? I didn't think it's a one-star film, but it's a 2 or 3 at very, very tops.
I just wondered if given the market that Catherine Hardwicke goes for, whether it's that whole thing but aimed at a 13-year-old, and therefore we felt excluded from it, because clearly everyone looks beautiful, like Max Irons when he came in. I mean,
yeah, but I like Twilight. And I liked Eclipse. That's aimed at the same market. I mean, actually, one of the things with it is, it's Twilight Light. I mean, that it really did feel like Twilight Light. It felt like it didn't have any of the substance or the depth or just the sheer cinematic enjoyment of the Twilight movies. Didn't you think that?
Yeah, it was a bit feeble, but I kind of enjoyed it, and I thought, I don't think this is aimed at me. But on the plus side, I didn't work out who the werewolf was.
No, okay.
Because it becomes a who is it kind of kind of film.
There was
just got irritated by Max Sands not wearing a coat.
Yes, that was you did want him to cover up. There was one particularly harsh review of it which said it makes you long for the stark realism of M. Night Shyamalan's The Village.
Right. Damned indeed.
The Village, actually.
Hops at 6.
Which is just utter rubbish, just annoying Easter. Now, of course, it's out-of-date Easter animation stuff, so you can that should be leaving the charts very, very soon.
Have you seen The Kiss yet, by the way?
The Kiss?
Yes.
What Kiss?
The Kiss on the Balcony.
Oh, you mean? Sorry, you mean the Royals? You mean that?
Yeah.
No.
I just wonder whether you've seen it or not.
No.
If it comes up while we're talking...
I don't want to know.
Would you like to...
What? It's two people kissing.
Yeah, but on a balcony.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Yeah, fine. Hooray. I did see Evita once. That had some people on a balcony.
Did you bring in your barricade, by the way, your Trotsky's barricade?
Ben, comrades, come. No.
Okay, so Beastly's at number 5.
Okay, which I haven't seen, but you've... Because I've been off for 2 weeks, as have you, but we asked for some Twitter reviews, and you got some.
Well, yeah, but I only got one on Beastly, which was another one of those self-reviewing film titles. That was pretty much it.
Okay, somebody tweeted Ghastly.
Okay, well, as you saw it, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Scream 4 is at 4. Now, we've got quite a lot on this. Neil Brown in Southbank in Melbourne. Simon and Mark, you know that feeling when you leave your house and think you've forgotten something.
Yeah.
Then about a second later, you realise that you haven't? That is scarier than Scream 4.
Oh, really?
Yours sincerely, Neil Brown. Tom Wade.
That's a disappointment.
Teacher of philosophy.
Tom Waits for No Man.
Tom Wade.
Oh, Tom Wade. Tom Wade's for No Man.
Two, the newly crowned Doctors of Cambridge, that's us. I went to see Scream 4 last week. I was down of the first two, lost a lot of enthusiasm for the third, felt that the fourth was unnecessary. However, there are some redeeming qualities. The opening has many witty references to the various horror franchises that have happened since the original trilogy, and take a few pop shots at the horror porn style.
Okay.
After that, it's all very by-the-numbers slasher. Of the new characters, the only one to stand out is Hayden Panettiere, and so it ends up relying on the original cast to pull it through. Characters that no one cares about are killed off quickly, and the audience spends the whole time waiting for the reveal of the killer. When it happens, it's probably the best twist of the series, but then things take another half hour to conclude, which soils things further. Scream keeps reminding everyone that the killer is rebooting the franchise. However, things end up more of a blunt knife than a successful stab, says Tom.
Good review. Did he didn't tweet that, did he? Tweet that? That must have been more than 140 characters.
You spotted that.
Okay,
it's an old-fashioned email.
Okay, fine.
Aid Bradley, avoiding the royal wedding in Stanmore, says, mm-hmm. I went to see Scream on the day of release. Whilst not a super fan, I'd always enjoyed the first two. This film was a real disappointment. I know it's supposed to be self-reverential and satirical, but this took up its own posterior to new levels. The references to Courtney Cox and David Arquette's marriage was particularly groan-worthy, as was the explanation of the word meta. Yes, we get you're supposed to be postmodern, but the main problem was the predictability of the plot. It was just too obvious who was involved from pretty early on, and okay. I'm not surprised they're ruling out Scream 5.
Okay. I mean, I have to say, I really liked the first Scream, and I felt that since then, everything else was... we didn't need any more. I thought the first Scream was great, and it was really funny how fast, if you're interested in slasher movies... Tonight, I'm doing this thing on stage at the NFT with Kim Newman, who wrote that book, Nightmare Movies. He was on the show last week. It is funny how, if you're interested in slasher movies, that moment when Scream did that kind of the postmodern reinvention of them was very, very quickly passed by just, oh, yeah, we're just back to old-style slasher movies again. It was, I don't care what you did last summer. It was very odd how fast the moment passed.
We had this on Arthur, which is a new entry at number 3.
And all I have to say about Arthur, I haven't seen the new version. I really like the original Dudley Moore Arthur. I have seen that loads of times, and every time it makes me funny. Him falling out of the car, him saying she's the princess of a very small island, so small, it's smaller than it would beat the crap out of Manhattan in a war. Last year they got the whole place carpeted. I mean, you know, that was a funny film.
Good, thanks for that. Arthur's at number 3, and this on Twitter from Beth Marshall.
On the remake.
Yes, obviously. Arthur, who would fancy a guy who still has a nanny? Brand is brand, no acting, it's got 5 laughs, and Helen Mirren has all of them.
That's a real shame, because the first one's got loads of laughs.
Rio's at number 2.
Which, you know, I mean, the most interesting thing about it is that the background looks pretty, the scenery stuff looks quite well done. Of course, its director does actually know that area, and the, you know, the CG is done rather well. It's a fairly forgettable
problem,
story.
I saw it in 2D.
Oh, fine.
With Child 3.
Better, brighter, clearer.
Aged 11. And what was really annoying was all the sequences that were clearly meant to be seen in 3D.
Yeah.
You know, and which were just lingered over with something dangling right in front of you, thinking, OK, but I'm watching it in 2D, so yeah. Don't do that.
No, I know, but even when you watch those things in 3D, you think, yeah, it's dangling. Can you get on with it now, please?
Talu on this says, Simon, I've just got home after watching Rio 3D with my dad, sister and nephew as an Easter weekend treat. We loved it. And, because we're extrovert scousers, broke into dance and full-on shoulder shimmying
no.
as we left the cinema. The music in this movie is great and the misty-eyed feel... the misty-eyed, good feeling it evoked, almost on a par with Enchanted, which is one of the best kids' movies in recent years.
Yeah, I loved Enchanted.
However, even my papa agreed. No need for 3D at all, considering that to date Dr. K's advice has been... Doesn't make sense, does it? For some serious high royal... OK, we'll leave it there.
Anyway,
Talu says it's, you know, so they've had a great
but don't
time.
Need
and
3D,
if you're an extrovert scouser, you don't need 3D, but it's shoulder shimmying fun.
OK. Somebody is asking on Twitter if anyone out there knows how to lip read and type really fast, they could do a written translation.
What because, they need is yeah. all the people who can lip read and were watching The Royal Wedding this morning, and they were all tweeting because they worked out what Prince William was saying to Catherine.
Oh, right.
While they were standing at the altar.
And was he saying, what do you think of 3D?
No, apparently he was saying, you look beautiful, or, you know, something like that. So what we need
yeah.
is that
Those
kind
people.
Of level of examination so that yeah. people know what's going on. Yeah. Other than that, it's a real waste of time.
Okay, how about this? Look.
Okay. We'll just leave it there. A fine moment of radio, that was. And the UK's number one is Fast and Furious 5.
Go on.
Well, all the reviews that I've seen have been fantastically positive.
Really? Are they being sent in by the film company? Or is it actually maybe a fantastically positive film? I don't know and can't pass judgment because I haven't seen it.
Graham Russell says, really enjoyed it. Nice little digs. I know this is a Scream review. Nice little digs are some of the new films, very whilst good. Not taking itself too seriously.
Okay.
Best laughs in the first 5 minutes. No really good scares. That's still on Scream 4.
Okay.
Okay, so this says, this is an email from Dr. Shane Sullivan.
Okay.
Having watched all the decent offerings at the local independent cinema and the few good films at the local World of Cine, I allowed myself to be talked into seeing Fast Five. I noticed that it had received some rather promising reviews and was highly rated on IMDb and other places. It is an unqualified triumph. Vin Diesel proves once again that he is the finest comedic actor of his generation. It is a long time since I laughed so loud and hard at the cinema. Fast Five is without doubt the funniest movie of the year. It is a wonderful and insightful spoof of the action genre. The writing, direction and acting, impeccable. It allowed the actors to pretend to be so wooden that they were in need of another coat of varnish. The plot was made to look wafer-thin. Many of the actions...
Wafer-thin.
Many of the actions of the characters made little or no sense. As a spoof of and homage to this genre, the plot and the characters' actions hung together as well as a wallpaper made of soup. All in all, a triumph. It has been argued that spoof movies may have dumbed down since the output of the Wayans. This movie demonstrates that the spoof movie is alive and well.
Very good.
Does that count as a kind of a
endorsement? Yeah, that's fine.
So,
firmly in cheek. Do we have to break at 8:30? Because if we do, then I won't do Thor first. I'll do Thor, because that's coming up.
Right, no, obviously what you mean is we're going up to 10 o'clock. Now, we're moving up to 10 o'clock.
Okay, the clock I'm looking at says 2:25.
Oh, you're expecting this to be edited, are you?
Yeah. No, it's fine. I'm not expecting... That's fine. They can listen to this. That's fine. Okay.
We're going to go up to 10 o'clock, so we're going to carry on straight. We've got 6 minutes until the news at 10 o'clock.
Okay, should we do Thor first?
I think we should do Thor first.
Okay, fine. So Thor first.
So
Thor 3D, and I'm sorry, but everyone has made the joke already about, you know, I want a ticket for Thor 3D. I'm sorry, the Thor theory is already on number 7. Fine. So, directed
by...
It is a very good joke.
Even though you tossed it aside casually.
Yeah, okay.
It's actually a good joke.
So, directed by Kenneth Branagh, of whom I am very, very fond. He gets a lot of slack, but I like Kenneth Branagh very much. So essentially, Thor in 3D. Do you remember when Priscilla Queen of the Desert came out? The guy who directed it said he made Priscilla Queen of the Desert, he was attempting to reinvent the musical because he said, as far as he was concerned, the musical had been killed off by Xanadu. And he said it in his Australian or maybe New Zealand. He said, remember the plot of Xanadu? The great god Zeus sends his only daughter Zira down to Earth to open a roller disco, right? Well, that is essentially the plot of Thor, which is that the great god Odin sends his firstborn son Thor down to Earth to retrieve a hammer. Because essentially what's happened is there's been a kind of Clash of the Titans-style upset in another realm in which the young Thor has got a bit previous and decided to go and sort out some underlying trouble with the ice giants, having been told by his father that he is to rein himself in and to behave himself and not to go off and do things unauthorized. So he is then banished to the earthly kingdom where... He essentially is Thor, the god of thunder, but without his powers, so is just some weird bloke walking around in strange dress, wondering about his hammer. Here's a clip.
Get the first aid kit. Do me a favor and don't be dead. Whoa, does he need CPR? Because I totally know CPR. Where did he come from? You all right?
Hammer?
Yeah, we can tell you're hammered. It's pretty obvious. Oh my God, Eric, look at this. We have to move quickly before this all changes.
Jane, we have to take him to the hospital.
Father!
He's fine, look at him.
Calm down! I know you can hear me, open the bifrost!
Hospital, you go, I'll stay.
You, what realm is this? Alfheim? Dornheim?
New Mexico?
You dare threaten me, Thor, with so puny a weapon!
What? He was freaking me out!
Okay, so that's the central joke, right? The central joke is Thor, god of whatever it is, comes down to Earth, no longer has any powers, is trying to retrieve his hammer, but meets up with Natalie Portman, who is a meteorologist come, you know, astrophysicist, and Stellan Skarsgård, who is trying for all he is worth to keep a straight face. Meanwhile, up in the other realm, his father is played by Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, nice to have that again.
But it's a fantastic bit of casting, because the fact of the matter is that Sir Anthony Hopkins has effectively been playing a comic book god for quite a long time. It just happens that in this movie he's doing what he's meant to do. So as far as the rifts of the thing is concerned, it's Xanadu meets Excalibur, because there's a whole thing about Thor is in the ground and the only person who can pick it up is not Thor, the hammer is in the ground, it can only be picked up by somebody who is worthy of the power of Thor. There's a few rifts from Transformers in there. There's a bit in it when they're referring to a character who sounded to me like they were referring to the old Spark. There's the baddie, you remember Batman and Robin with Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze, no one put me in the cooler.
Yes,
they are essentially the ice demons. And then there's a kind of, you know, fish out of water thing that he's, you know, he's Thor, but he's now in America and he's talking funny, but everybody. So there's all that stuff. It's all a mishmash. It's all in there together. And when it was first announced that Ken Branagh was doing this, there was a rather snotty piece in, I think it was The Guardian. I mean, I'm sure it was.
It would be because it's the only paper you ever
probably
see.
Wasn't Fangoria magazine, which said, what is Kenneth Branagh doing directing this? What happened to Kenneth Branagh? You know, what happened to the greatest Shakespearean actor of his generation? The man who did Henry V, the man who did Hamlet, the man who was, you know, hailed, blah, 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 blah. Why is he now directing this? Well, the reason is, quite simply, he's having a lot of fun, and the best thing about it is we're all having a lot of fun watching him do it. And if you're surprised by the fact that Branagh's doing it, it's probably because you didn't see, like, for example, The Magic Flute. The last two things that Branagh did, remember, he had two movies out very close together, which was Sleuth and The Magic Flute. And The Magic Flute was this kind of, wasn't seen by very many people, sort of operatic fantasy, which consisted in large part of very Ken Russell-like overstaged operatics. There's one bit in it which, you know, large women with big horned helmets and a huge metal breastplate driving a tank.
Well, that's opera, things. Isn't it?
Well, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And when Branagh did that, I mean, I said to him, he said, it does look like a Ken Russell film, and he took that as a compliment. Of course, if you then look back to Frankenstein, one of the things that and I really like Frankenstein, one of the things that people gave Frankenstein a hard time about was, oh, it's so overwrought, it's so much of Ken, you know, running around with his shirt torn open and his rippling torso, and it's all over, it's all histrionic, it's all operatic. Well, I never had a problem with that. If you read the novel of Frankenstein, it's exactly like that. In fact, what he understood, I think, was that the gothic romance sense of it, that everything is turned up to 11, was what was, you know, interesting about the story. I mean, I think there are some problems with Frankenstein, but I like that movie very much. And if you look at it now, it has aged much better than people expect. So if you understand Frankenstein, and if you saw The Magic Flute, it's no surprise at all that Branagh has ended up doing Thor and having so much fun with it. I mean, there's a little bit at the beginning when there's a lot of backstory that has to be got out of the way, which is a little bit sort of Transformers-style backstory, explaining the thing and the hang, and then they climb down in the different realm, and then the gate and the thingy bolt, and then he gets thrown down to earth, and then the thing kicks off. But once it kicks off, it has a brace of, you know, good, fine, scenery-chewing performances. I mean, no one more scenery-chewing than Sir Anthony Hopkins, who is really giving it, you know, all he's got. Natalie Portman doing a very good job of being the mortal who falls for the Thunder God in the same way that in Xanadu. That's essentially the story, that Olivia Neutron Bomb comes down and, you know, and she's amused, but, you know, she's amused rather than amusing. She's amused.
I got that.
Yeah, fine. And all that stuff plays out very nicely, and it's not overdone. Plus, it's fantastically camp, because everyone who comes down from that dimension comes down looking like an extra from a Village People video, and everyone is able to laugh at it. And the other thing that people forget is that Kenneth Branagh actually does direct comedy quite well. I mean, did you like Peter's Friends?
Well, we're out of time, so what we'll do is we'll come back in just a few moments. This is Wittertainment in an unusual place, but we'll be back shortly. And welcome back. Here we are, Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode, with some movie reviews for the next 25 minutes. Please don't text, please don't email. You can tweet, because, you know, we'll get round to it. It's just that we won't see it when you send it in.
Yeah, due to the royalist conspiracy, which means that even if you've tuned in to see us on the internet, you can't hear us. Although if you're now watching this on the internet, you will be able to hear us because it's been post-synced.
Yeah. But the live stream thing didn't work, and you think you've been silenced by the royalists, who are clearly in the ascendancy.
I know. It's clearly a conspiracy. Anyway, so to finish that sentence...
That's right, because just before the news, you were halfway through a thought.
I thought Peter's Friends was funny. I think... Okay, so to sum, I think Branagh has a great sense of comedy. I think he has an operatic sense. I think that Thor is something that deserves to be done with both opera and fun. I think the movie is utterly ridiculous and, you know, ludicrous in places, but it's knowingly so. It has some genuinely funny comedy in it. The 3D is totally extraneous, and I could have lived without it, but
really?
I understand. I'm not going to go on about it. But
really?
The film was much more fun than I thought it might have been, and it's largely, I think, because I remain a Ken Branagh fan, and I do think he has a sense of big, blusterous entertainment, and I think people who said, what on earth is he doing making this kind of movie, just haven't looked back at his back catalogue, because all the evidence is there before.
Michael in Leeds says, dear Casket of Ancient Winters and The Destroyer, if you told me even a few years ago that Kenneth Branagh would one day direct a Thor film that would be about character as much as action, be well acted and treat some of the potentially daft Leon Kirbyisms with a straight face without ever losing a sense of humour, then I would have probably laughed in your face.
Shall I continue the email?
But that's what we got, and I enjoyed it very much. And I hope the good doctor doesn't get too worked up and flappy-handed about the 3D. I thought there were some good uses of it, particularly for Asgard. This from...
Asgard.
Zach Jacobson says...
Zach Jacobson.
Hi, Odin and trusty Steed. I watched Thor yesterday with some friends after debating whether we should watch it in 2D or 3D. As luck would have it, I won and we saw it properly.
In 2D.
Correct.
Yay!
I went in expecting a couple of hours of mindless entertainment peppered with random stepping stones to next year's Avengers. What I got was a couple of hours of mindless entertainment peppered with random stepping stones to next year's Avengers. The movie is fine as a standalone film and I found the performances to be particularly solid. Unfortunately, it's not a standalone film and it felt like a sequel or a prequel to some other film that isn't out yet.
Well, it is part of the Marvel universe. There is a gag at one point, is that one of Starks and all that stuff. That does happen.
I did enjoy the film, enjoyed it even more the fact that I wasn't wearing sunglasses for the whole time.
Yeah.
This from, who is it? Henry Church, BA, Honours, History and Film Studies, and now a teacher of both. I've just returned from seeing a preview screening of the new Kenneth Branagh film, Thor. I'm an avid fan of anything Marvel and was awaiting the release of this post-Iron Man Marvel studio production with excitement. What it turned out to be was a maelstrom of, well, clunkiness, to coin a word. To say it light, say that the plot lightly clattered and banged around more than a transformer inside a tin can factory is to say the truth. I tired desperately to follow the plot for the first hour, but decided to give up half the way through, not because the plot was so tangled or convoluted, but for the simple reason that I just could not be bothered with something so hideously dull. The script left so much to be desired that there is no point attempting to salvage it. And the normally fantastic, is it Idris?
I think so, yes. Idris Elba.
Yeah, and Natalie Portman beautifully portrayed this by joining in the clunkiness of the film. It seems Miss Portman used up all her acting prowess on the formidable tour de force performance in Black Swan, instead opting to swoon at her lead actor, the impossibly attractive Chris Hemsworth.
Can I just say, with terrible hair, and that's the other thing about the film, which is it does have genuinely terrible hair. I mean, it's a melange of bad hair. And the moments, there's one fantastic moment in which Sir Anthony Hopkins, wearing, I presume, what is a wig, stands, you know, in silhouette with his son, and it's like he's got the full fantastically terrible hair, and his son has got like a younger version that will grow into an even more fantastically terrible hair. It's like a Darth Vader-style helmet of bad hair, and I liked it.
It sounds as though they're like members of Saxon.
Yes, yeah,
it's that
exactly,
kind
yes.
of 80s although, power pop
although,
band.
Yeah, although slightly better built.
Right, no, yeah, absolutely. Henry J. Church concludes by, he says, being a Marvel fan, I'm looking for saving graces. The film looks incredible. Whatever can be said of the plot, acting and script, whoever designed Asgard and the other non-Earth bases scenes did a truly incredible job. And when everything was falling apart within the film, the aesthetic provided one last stand for Branagh's talent. It must be seen to be believed, says Henry.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of fun.
Okay, so that Thor dealt with. Just a reminder, don't text, for heaven's sake, because it'll end up going to the wrong programme. And don't email. Well, you can email, actually, at any stage. It's just that we won't get it for this week's show.
Yes, it's not going to happen.
So you can email mayo@bbc.co.uk, but it won't be a part of today's programme because we've already done this show and we're well out of here.
Yep.
And I'm watching a recording of the royal wedding even as we speak. And I know that you will, in your deep, dark Republican heart, that you'll be going home and the family will be saying, come on, Dad, or
no,
darling,
won't.
Or whichever, and say, gather around and watch this heartwarming moment.
No, they won't, because by the time I get home, it'll be midnight, because tonight I'm on stage at the NFT with Kim Newman talking about Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
OK, well, fair enough.
OK, yeah. Fine. So I think you lose that round.
What else is new?
Cedar Rapids, which is, frankly, sadly disappointing comedy from Miguel Arteta. Here's the story. Essentially, Dorky Ed Helms, who's a dorky insurance salesman, living in Dorky Town, but amazingly having a relationship with Sigourney Weaver, who used to be his school teacher and is now, they're now both obviously grown and adult, and she is using him in a downstairs department way once a week, but he believes, because he's a total dork, that
using him in a downstairs department?
Yes.
Does it involve Mr. Happy?
It
Mr. and Mrs. Happy.
Okay, he believes it. Can I move on from this?
Okay.
He believes that he's in love with her.
We're post-Watershed.
I know. For, yes, we are now, but I'm saying it at 2:40 in the afternoon. I'm still thinking of the school run. Okay. So anyway, then works in an insurance company. He has to go to an insurance company conference down in Cedar Rapids. He's completely dorky. He's never been out of his comfort zone. He goes there, immediately meets up with a gang of people who are terribly, different to him. One of whom says, you know what we need to do is we need to drink a lot of beer. Another of whom is played by Anne Hesh, who we haven't seen for quite a long time, who suddenly decides... like,
where's she been, do you know?
Well, astral planes, I think, probably.
Right.
Suddenly decides that he, being incredibly dorky, is fantastically attractive and attempts to lead him astray once more in the manner of these films. At one moment, he has a soliloquy about the nature of insurance. Here's a clip.
I lost my dad in a sawmill accident. when I was 6 years old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but the insurance agent fought like a tiger with the sawmill to make sure my mom and I were taken care of, and we were. And I remember thinking when I was a kid, I was just like, this guy's a hero. I gotta say, I think insurance agents get a bum rap, you know? Like this river, the Cedar River, flooded a couple years ago, whole city.
Yeah, I remember, it was a massive disaster.
Massive disaster, billions of dollars in damage. And who do you think was in the trenches trying to get people's lives back in order? It was insurance agents. Not all of them, but a lot of them worked really hard to get people's lives back on track.
You realize you just made it sound cool to be an insurance salesman?
It was the whole film.
No, well, the thing is, we played that clip. All the other clips were completely rubbish anyway, and that was the only clip that was kind of coherent. And that's the sort of, that's the sentimental heart lifted out of it and meant to be taken ironically. Here's the problem with the film. Is it's essentially that age-old story about, you know, nerdy, dorky guys are fantastically attractive to women in a way which only happens in those particular movies. And the story is, it's like The Hangover light, but with pretensions towards arty, smart film, knowing sensibility. So, you know, guy is taken out of his comfort zone and he suddenly finds himself drinking and taking drugs and having, you know, illicit affairs and not coping with it and running around in his underpants and falling into the swimming pool. He's led astray by John C. Reilly, who is just giving this full-on sort of drunken performance, and Anne Heche, who appears to be as mad as a box of frogs. The weird thing about the film is that for the first 5 minutes it was quite kooky and funny and I quite laughed, and then the laughs just dried up and it just became yet another slightly irritating, slightly annoying and very, very sort of stretching an ultimately rather tiring single gag, which is he's a dork, he doesn't get anything, therefore everybody loves him, therefore everybody thinks he's funny. There's a load of jokes in it that are basically like hitting a barn door, which is like, for example, the insurance company is all tied up with these religious zealots, who's very easy to take the mick out of them. Insurance company men are selling insurance, very easy to take the mick out of them. People who wear sort of funny jumpers, very easy to take the mick out. It has that sort of strange, slightly smug sensibility, at least with The Hangover just felt like a, you know, it was what it was, and I didn't like it, but it was what it was. The problem was,
what was it?
Well, it was just a, you know, boys on the rampage movie, wasn't it? It was Revenge of the Nerds, although they weren't nerds in that. But in the case of this, it's one of those. But it seems to think that it's cleverer than it is, and I'm sure that all the people who made it sat around afterwards being very pleased. There's some sort of knowing in jokes. People refer to things that they've been in, and they make sort of jokes about, you know, oh yeah, get that. It's like, yeah, fine. But problem essentially not funny, and certainly, I mean, funny for about 5 minutes, and then not funny. Which moves us on to Insidious, which is a horror movie which suffers from a similar problem. Not that it's not funny, but that it's not scary. Have you seen the trailers for Insidious?
No.
Okay, so the trailer for Insidious looked like quite a good trailer. It said, you know, it's I saw it, I can't remember what movie I was seeing, and the trailer for Insidious came on, and it was one of those things you don't see very much, and you see a little bit, and then you see it, and then there's a little scary noise.
What do I see a bit?
Well, you know, there's people in a house, and oh, it's not. And the thing in the trailer is, it's not the house, it's your son. So story
it's
is...
your son?
Your son, yeah.
It's not the house?
It's not the house.
Why would it have been the house?
Well, can I explain the plot?
Well, you're just talking about the trailer.
The trailer,
so,
yeah.
So there are people in a house.
It's not the house. They think they're in a haunted house, and then somebody turns up and says, it's not the house, it's your son.
So the son is doing stuff.
Well, in the trailer, that appears to be the case.
What kind of stuff is he doing in the trailer?
Well, haunting stuff.
How do I know that?
Well,
how does he manage? How
okay,
do I know?
Well, I'll tell you if you give me a chance. Okay, so the story is...
Well, I just want to get the trailer clear before we move on
well,
to the movie.
Well, the trailer doesn't do anything other than that sort of suggestion that there's scary stuff happening and some loud noises and people looking frightened.
Well, what's scary in the trailer?
Now that you ask me to say what's scary about it, I don't know. It was just quite well cut. The trailer was quite well put together.
Right. Okay. So it's nicely cut trailer.
Nicely cut trailer. Fine.
But not scary, really.
Well, the trailer was a little bit chilling... Okay.
Only because it was nicely cut.
Yes, because it was they made the best of a bad job. Story
I wish I'd
is,
seen the trailer now.
Young couple, yeah, you will do. Young couple in a house, scary stuff is happening, right? They think, oh, you know, house is haunted. And then their young son goes up into the attic, has a scary moment. Next thing you know, young son has fallen into a coma, but he's not in a coma.
He's in a coma.
Well, who knows? Who knows what he can be in? It's not a coma. He's in a strange, different
state. He's just
state.
Asleep.
Well, maybe he is, or maybe he's in another realm. Who knows? The only person who knows is, I know, let's go and get in the kooky parapsychologist who'll be able to explain that, in fact, he's not in a coma, he's in some other... Do you want to hear a clip?
He's in what?
He's in some other realm. Maybe, or maybe not. Do you want to hear a clip?
What kind of a realm?
Well, who knows? It's a horror movie.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
It's 10:30. You've been coming home late every single night.
You know, I don't like it either. I was grading tests. I mean...
Josh, I'm scared. I'm so scared, and...
I'm scared? He's my son, too.
You don't understand. I'm scared for Dalton. I'm scared of this house. There's something wrong with this place. I'm not imagining it. I can feel it. It's like a sickness. Ever since we've moved in, everything's just gone wrong.
You think our house is haunted?
I don't think it. I know it. Things move around in here by themselves. I walk into the kitchen at night to get a drink. I can feel eyes on me. I need you.
But it's not the house. It's your son.
Well, if they're going to call him Dalton, what kind of kid is he going to be anyway?
What's wrong with Dalton?
Dalton's a ridiculous name, isn't it?
Is it?
Of course it's going to be the son. If the son's called... Well, have you ever met anyone called Dalton?
No.
Oh, there you go.
Well, there we go. If you haven't met anyone called it, then they're clearly obvious. Anyway, so, look, essentially, the way that the movie is sold is that it's, you know, from the creators of, meaning from people who worked on the Saw movie, made the Saw movies, and also were involved in the Paranormal Activity. And one of the things with Paranormal Activity was, I didn't find Paranormal Activity scary, but I understand that other people did. And, I mean, for example, I've said this before, James King saw Paranormal Activity and he was completely freaked out by it. I thought the problem with Paranormal Activity was it was just long sections of nothing happening and then somebody jumping up and saying boo. But there were certain moments in it that had a kind of, you know, had a sort of style, a moment in which you see the recording of the woman standing by the side of her husband's bed and it's just fast forward and you realise that she's standing there for about 4 hours. She doesn't actually do anything, but it's quite a creepy idea. Fine, okay? In the case of this, what you get is the lead-up, which is lots of quiet followed by lots of banging noises. And then, essentially, you just get a series of riffs from other movies that you've seen before. So you get the haunted house riff from Amityville Horror. You get the silence followed by loud bangs riffs from Paranormal Activity, or perhaps more importantly, Paranormal Inactivity 2. You get what looks like it's going to be the possessed kids riff, you know, the paedophobia riff, the fear of children thing, which was very, very, you know, this was big in the 1970s, you know, The Exorcist and The Omen and, you know, Audrey Rose, lots of films that dealt with that sort of idea. Then you get, at the end, a whole lot of, you know, let's go venturing in other dimensions, which sort of comes from Poltergeist. And incidentally, when the parapsychologist comes in, it's clearly the parapsychologist. It's like they've gone, I know, let's get a kooky parapsychologist, you know, like the one they get in Poltergeist. You remember in Poltergeist, when there's the whole joke is that the parapsychologist turns up and seems to be a sort of vaguely comedic character, but then she actually sort of knows. You remember that?
A short lady.
Exactly. Well, there's a sort of similar gag here, which is there's a sort of comedy turn involved in the parapsychologist and her assistants. And then there's a whole bunch of other realm stuff, which was frankly much better done in that movie, The Hole, the Joe Dante movie, The Hole. So, having seen the trailer, which, as we've established, was only frightening because it was quite well put together, and then thought, oh, well, it's, you know, look, it's a, you know, it's a haunted house movie, and it's a scary kids movie, and it's not a gory movie, and I like that, because, to be honest, I'm fed up with, you know, all the, you know, the splatter that's going on at the moment. And then I sat there watching, saying, the problem with Insidious, it's not scary, and it's becoming increasingly sort of silly as it goes on, and the bigger and more production that it gets, the less scary and less bothersome you get. And at the end, I just got quite cross, because it's, I want a horror film to be scary, I want there to be two or three jumps, I want to be made to have that creepy feeling. Somebody said, okay, well, I know the problem is it's because you're a horror fan, therefore you've become inured to it. And no, that's not true, because as I said, even when I wasn't scared by Paranormal Activity, I did understand that it did scare people. I would be surprised if anyone was scared by Insidious, because it's just silly and boring.
So is the trailer more scary than the film?
It is, and it's shorter.
So they could have, if they re-edited it, could it
what?
Be the whole film in the manner of the trailer, would it be more scary?
No, because there's not a whole film worth of scary in there. There's a film is like 95
what
minutes.
Would have made it more scary?
Well, a good script, a good idea, some well-directed, you know, good story. And also, there's another thing, which is there's this honking kind of Haunting of Hill House twist, which you know, which isn't a twist anyway.
It's a
denouement.
Denouement, so just an ending?
No, it's not even just...
A reveal?
It's just a bunch of riffs from other movies that you've seen done better. And I sat there thinking, oh, I quite like the Amityville Horror, the original one. I really, really like The Haunting of Hill House. I really kind of enjoyed Poltergeist, except it got a bit silly in places. I wouldn't mind seeing The Omen again. That had a scary kid in it. You know, all that stuff was going on because nothing of any interest was happening on screen, which is a shame because actually the adult cast are perfectly fine, but it's not a good movie.
Is there a... So the denouement is the kind of the dinner?
Yeah.
It hasn't got that.
No, but it's not dinner. It's dinner.
A denouement?
Dinner. It's right. It's dinner. Dinner is like the thing, but then it's like dinner. Oh, that's the bit you didn't see coming, but then, of course, you did.
By the way, you know, we're late into the evening.
Yeah, no,
well, it's Wintertainment After
it's
Dark.
9 minutes to three in the afternoon. You know.
But one of the reason why the live streaming didn't work this afternoon,
apart from the royalist conspiracy,
well,
which it so clearly was.
What happened apparently is that the BBC website went down. Right, the whole thing went down under the weight of royal wedding traffic.
There we go. So it was a royal conspiracy.
Yeah, so there have been problems across the board on all BBC kind of online stuff. So there's a big backlog of problems for them to sort out. So in a sense, you're right, it is a royalist plot.
Ta-da!
That is a denouement.
Oh, I see.
That's the thing. So that's what it is.
That's a verdict.
There's been so much interest, which must make your dark Republican heart even darker.
Why do you call it that?
Because that means everyone has loved today so much. There's so much joy in their people's hearts.
That it's spoiled. That it spoiled my movie reviews.
Spoiled the live streaming of your reviews.
Okay. Can I review another film?
That's the way it goes. Okay, well, look, we've got 7 minutes.
Okay, so
make it good.
Well, there's two. I Saw the Devil, which is a new film by Kim Ji-woon, who made Tale of Two Sisters, which I liked very much. And, stylish director. It's basically a tale of extreme vengeance. At the very beginning of it, Choi Min-sik plays this serial killer who murders a pregnant woman, and then her husband, who works for who's a special service man, therefore decides that he's going to take his own revenge. It's actually fairly easy for him to find the killer, but what he then decides to do is to wreak an appalling revenge on the killer by constantly catching him, torturing him even unto madness. Now, the problem with the film is this. You know that
it's not very edifying.
Well, there's a couple of problems. One is it's very nasty, and unlike Tale of Two Sisters, which is really a very good piece of atmospheric work, very interesting film. I think this felt. I mean, it was nasty. There's an awful lot of leering sexual violence in it. There's an awful lot of torturing and tying up, and it seemed. And actually, this is the most depressing thing about it. It seemed very sort of post-Hostel. Which I think is a real shame, particularly since I think in the past Kim Ji-woon is a much more interesting work than that. There's a Nietzsche quote which is bandied around in this, which is, he who fights monsters should see to it that he does not in the process become monstrous, which we all thought was incredibly intelligent and brilliant when we were teenagers. And then sort of later on you start to realise that, if I hear it again in a horror movie, I think I will scream, because it's that idea about, you fight monsters, you become monstrous, and here is some evidence of you becoming monstrous. The really disappointing thing about I Saw the Devil, and I know a lot of people would be interested in it because Kim Ji-woon is an interesting director, and he's a very, very stylish director, and there are moments in it which the floating camera and the strength of performance in Choi Min-sik's got a very sort of strange presence. You think all this technical skill is being used actually to tell a story which I have seen done better so many places. Plus, it is nasty and grim and salacious in a way which I found really, really off-putting. And it's long, and it tires the audience out quite. It outstays its welcome quite solidly. And it was a real shame, because I really wanted to like it more. And I do understand that there are things in it that are technically well done, but I thought, it just looked like a slightly more stylishly done, but actually rather nasty, rather tawdry, rather repetitive film of a series of gruesome encounters that it just involved one horrible assault after another and was solidly unedifying, and I didn't like it at all.
And do you see the devil?
Well, he who fights monsters should see to it they do not in the process become monstrous.
Right, so therefore the devil that we might see isn't his demonic majesty, but maybe ourselves reflected in a mirror.
When you look long into the abyss also looks back into you, as I believe Nietzsche said. So, finally,
have you read a lot of Nietzsche?
Not a lot. I mean, I've read the same as everybody else. I've read Beyond Good and Evil.
Everybody else? I think we could do another one of our straw polls in a pre-recorded programme, so don't join in. My overwhelming sense is that most people haven't read any Nietzsche.
Okay, can I very quickly review The Veteran?
But if I was going to, what should I read?
Beyond Good and Evil.
What would I learn from that?
When you look long into the abyss also looks back into you. Okay, Beyond Good and Evil.
Kind of Reader's Digest summary.
Exactly, that's it.
That's all you need.
Okay. Toby Kebbell, who was up for a Rising Star, BAFTA Rising Star Award some time ago, stars in The Veteran, which is a low-budget British movie about a returning British soldier who comes back to his estate, where there are basically there's no call for his trade, except the local gang lord drug dealer wants to take him on. So he's then approached by a couple of shady intel operatives, one of whom is played by Brian Cox, and nobody does shady intel like Brian Cox.
Is that Brian Cox, the astronomer?
No.
Professor Brian Cox.
No, Brian, the proper
Wonders
Brian Cox.
Wonders of the Universe.
Not the one who says in everything that he picks up, this is the most incredible thing in the world. But this here is the most, and I'm holding this thing here that I'm walking up this mountain. This thing is the most incredible. But now this here is the infinitesimally incredible thing of this.
On Question Time, a few weeks ago, they had actor Brian Cox on there. Absolutely sure they
thought they got the other one.
They thought that they had booked Professor Brian Cox. They got actor Brian Cox, who of course is very good, but not the one.
Yes, but not
that
one. Okay, fine. Anyway, so he's this shady operative. Essentially, they
say,
"Look, okay, we want you to work for us. We want you to trace somebody who we think has become too involved with a terrorist cell. We don't know whether they were. Who are they working for? Who are you working for? Who are we working for?" And everything sort of spirals in and around itself. Every now and then, people stop to discuss the art of war and to hold forth about the post 9/11 world. And those bits, I have to say, are done rather clunkily. It's a kind of mishmash of ideas. I mean, you can see that the influences of Bresson, of Schrader's script writing. I mean, there's a lot of Taxi Driver hanging around in the background. There's a sort of Heat-style finale done in a much more, you know, sort of lower, stripped-down, British homemade movie kind of way. There are some very interesting ideas in it. There are also some places in which it just, you know, it oversteps its own mark and it falls apart. But it's held together by Toby Kebbell, who I think is a very, very strong performer. And an awful lot of the film is on his face, him being non-verbal, him communicating through his physicality, which he does really well. I think it would be a very different film if it weren't for him, but the work that he does with the director works very well. And although there are great flaws in the film, I think it does have clunkinesses, it does have problems. I think it's far from perfect, and it does fall apart very badly. It is held together when it works by him and by his work with the director, and for that it should be praised. And it has high ambitions. I don't think it strikes all of them by quite some distance, but it does aim higher than you might expect.
OK, so before we do the movie of the week, let me say, coming up after the news, Steve Nolan live from a royal wedding party near Keswick, in the Lake District, of course. So a bit more royalist stuff for you, Mark, as you drive home.
Driving home. I'm going to the NFT to do an onstage with Kim Newman.
And we're going to be back with more with Entertainment Now. This is all... So this is
housekeeping, isn't it?
This is a political plot now. Because on Thursday there's local elections and Scottish elections and the referendum. We think on Friday there's going to be so much stuff coming in, so many results in an exciting way coming in that we won't get
You're
on.
You're trying really hard to sound
so
exciting about that.
What we're doing is we're doing Wittertainment between 2 and 4 on Thursday. So your next dose of this film show is going to be on Thursday between 2 and 4. How about that?
We are the moving feast that accommodates both royalty and democracy.
That's right. Let's hear it for the royal wedding. Would you like some confetti? Over
no.
There? Go on.
No. Move. No. Don't. Just don't, because I'm not having it.
Look good.
I'm not having it.
Look good in the quiff.
I'm not having it.
Okay, all right. How disappointing. Movie of the week.
Thor, God of Thunder by Kenneth Branagh.
Thanks very much indeed for listening.
With Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Back on Thursday at 2. Well, that was the show. As it was.
Yes, it was strange doing it with no one listening live.
Yeah. Apart from five people through the glass, who actually, I think, were watching the Royal Wedding reruns.
The problem is my back is to the five people, but you can see them. Often when I'm trying to engage you, you're looking at them because they're doing something more interesting.
Please let me pour confetti into
but
your
why?
Hair. It'll look nice when you go on BBC News Channel.
I'm not doing the News Channel. You know why?
Why are you dressed up like a ponce?
Because I'm doing an onstage with Kim Newman at the NFT about Let's Scare Jessica to Death. Are you not listening to any of this?
Now you mention
and
it.
And I'm not doing News 24. Do you know why?
It doesn't exist
Because of the
anymore.
Royal Wedding! Because of the Royal Wedding is why I'm not doing News 24. And it doesn't exist, the News Channel.
Okay.
So thank you for that, Wills and Kate.
Shall we sing Jerusalem before we finish?
I like Jerusalem.
Well, it's a royalist anthem.
I believe you. I think there's more than one.
Oh, it's a socialist anthem.
Yeah, it's a Blakean anthem.
A Blakean anthem.
And did those feet in ancient times walk upon England's mountains green?
I didn't mean it.
No. And was the holy Lamb of God in England's pleasant pastures seen? No. And did the countenance divine shine forth upon those clouded hills? No. And was Jerusalem builded here amidst those dark satanic mills? No.
With commentary, with director's commentary.
Yeah, but every...
The British Israelite movement were a very interesting bunch of people.
Yeah, OK.
They thought Jesus came to England.
Did you know that?
I know that Elvis landed at RAF Briars Norton or wherever it was.
He's still alive, you know. He really, really is. You know, it's true.
Yep.
Anyway, that's quite enough. The podcast extras are going to be longer than the show. But as the show is shorter because of the royal wedding, we can
do it. Doesn't matter. Actually, I'll tell you what, let's do an hour of podcast extras in order to give the podcast this. If you're running and you thought you were coming home, forget it. There's another 10 miles to go.
Actually, there is this. I'm just going to do this from Neil in Woking. At the risk of being even snider about Zach than the Good Doctor, can I use your excellent show to express gratitude to the director of Sucker Punch? My 16-year-old daughter and friend set off to view this alleged movie, ignoring, as teenagers do, my efforts to pass on the Good Doctor's health warnings. Youngsters naturally returned, deeply chastened. To quote my daughter's perceptive review, a big muddle of bizarre sets and barely dressed women. So my thanks go to Mr. Snider for demonstrating to youth the value of listening to older, wiser heads about popular culture. A lesson learned at lower cost than, say, a drunken binge or a dented car, and hopefully with less lasting damage, says Neil. Thank you very much. Is that the end?
Yes.
Shall we finish?
Yes.
Don't forget, we're back next Thursday, Podcast Unaffected. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
On digital and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Kermode and Mayo's Film Review.